Welcome back to another episode of Making a Martini. I am your host, Caleb Figgles, and happy Halloween, all you spooky little twats out there. I know that celebrating Halloween on a Monday more than likely doesn't happen. I don't know, so I'm just assuming my listening base that I think exists celebrated this past weekend. I know I did. I have been trying to go as a male Cruella De Vil for 3 years now, and I keep fucking up and waiting to the last minute, but I went out this weekend as Marty McFly from Back to the Future. You know, figured I have the red puffy vest anyway, so might as well throw on my denim jacket and call it a fucking night. But it was a blast. And then, to be as cute as fuck, I carved pumpkins with my mom while we watched Beetlejuice and drank a lot of wine. You know, just like some classic Halloween shit. Whatever. Scooter wore his jack-o'-lantern pajamas, which was so cute. And also, I just have to tell you guys that this bitch moved in above me in my apartment building, and like, holy fuck, does this cunt know how to stomp? I kid you not, guys. She has knocked pictures off my wall. She's caused some wine glasses to shake together so hard that one of them cracked. And now there's a crack in my ceiling that just keeps growing. And it's because of this clopping troll upstairs. It's ridiculous. So I apologize if she comes through. Okay, but you might hear. Also, you guys, big news. Making a Martini is now an Instacart affiliate. Oh, shit. Wah, 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 wah. This means... regret that. This means that if you sign up for Instacart with the link in my bio, you will get free delivery on your first order over $35. So stay tuned for the commercial that comes later in this episode about that. Okay. I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. So this episode, sticking with the spooky Halloween feel, since, you know, it's Halloween, is going to be talking about the about an unsolved crime spree since the late 1990s and the, you know, menacing graffiti that comes with it and with each victim of the smiley face killer. But first, a Making a Martini news update. Welcome to the Making a Martini Special News Bulletin. I am Caleb Figgles, and here is what's making news. Tom Brady and his wife have finalized their divorce due to Tom Brady coming out of retirement to continue to play a game. And look, I will even admit that Tom Brady is a great quarterback, and I don't give a flying fuck about the Eagles. I don't really give a flying fuck about football. But come on, man, give it up. Like, playing one more year will never be talked about more than the fact that you ended your marriage to play one more year. On the plus side, he at least has his Christmas shopping done for his kids. He just has to get them Madden 23 so they can spend a little time with their dad every once in a while. Kanye West continues to insert himself into the news cycle, and of course it's for all the wrong reasons. After his anti-Semitic tweets that I covered on my previous episode, Adidas has put an end to their partnership with him, and to that, all I have to say is, Adidas, if you're listening and need someone else to sponsor, Making a Martini is available. We love all races, religions, genders, orientations, and everyone except people who fart in public and then pretend like it was someone else. But for Kanye to even put more salt in the wound, he decided to show up at Skechers, unannounced, to try and create a relationship with them, which, great way to start that, buddy. And Skechers had him removed from their headquarters. The best part of all of this is that Kanye is canceled, and the irony of him potentially having to become a gold digger to maintain his lifestyle is just too juicy to resist. Speaking of getting kicked out of places, James Corden has revealed his true colors when he was permanently removed from Balthazar, a popular NYC restaurant, after he was disrespectful and rude to his waiter after his order was incorrect. And may I just say, fucking finally. Like, I just know that deep down, no matter what people say, that is how James Corden really is. The owner of Balthazar took to Instagram and called Corden a cretin, and then James apologized, but then later took back his apology because he said he didn't do anything wrong. People are rude to waitstaff all over the country and the world, but no one ever attacks them on Twitter. Like, bitch, have you ever heard of a Karen? Like, where have you been? That's all people do. But of course, he went on his talk show and addressed the issue, saying that it was due to his wife's food allergies and that he apologizes and has the utmost respect for people in the service industry, blah, 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 blah. Whatever. But perhaps the most egregious part of this story is that the owner of Balthazar decided to rescind the ban from his restaurant because Corden, quote, was a man and owned up to his mistake and apologized publicly. Like, how embarrassing for you to not stick to your guns and hold a fake-ass celebrity accountable. Anyway, that's all the time we have here for the Making a Martini News Bulletin. I am Caleb Figgles, and now, back to our regularly scheduled programming. Okay, smiley face killer. So recently, on TikTok, people have been commenting on how there's a serial killer living in Pittsburgh, and that it's a smiley face killer. And the reason that people are saying Pittsburgh is that one of the last victims of the smiley face killer was potentially Dakota James. And we will get into his story in a little bit. But he went missing and was found in the river back in 2017, I believe. I mean, I know. I've just looked at all of this. But recently in Pittsburgh, in early October, a special dive team from Adventures with Purpose and Chaos. It's a name. But they went into the Allegheny River to search for two missing female residents of Pittsburgh. They weren't missing together, they were just missing. I think I felt the need to clarify that. They did not find them, but what they wound up finding instead was the body of a missing male resident of Pittsburgh and 100 other cars in the river, which is crazy. Also, when you consider the fact that they were only searching in one of the three rivers of Pittsburgh, it's a lot. That's a lot. So all of this has spurned up more stories about the smiley face killer. The last Pittsburgh really heard about the smiley face killer was back in 2017 with the Dakota James case, and then a little bit again in 2019 when an Oxygen special came out about the smiley face killer. So this next part, all right, so this is a sad story about the death of a, you know, young man. So trigger warning, you know, if anyone doesn't want to listen to that, then don't, please don't. But back in January of 2017, Dakota James goes missing after a night out drinking with his friends. He was last seen by a security camera walking through the cultural district in downtown Pittsburgh, ultimately heading to. Thanks, Scooter. Anyway, ultimately heading to his apartment in the North Shore, and he never made it. 40 days after his disappearance, Dakota's body was found in the Ohio River on March 6th, 2017. The investigators at the time claimed that they believed that his body had traveled through a dam about 10 miles before it was found where it was found, and the cause of death was labeled as an accidental drowning. With the idea that, you know, he was intoxicated and fell into the river and couldn't get out, being that this was January, the water temperature at that time would have been incredibly cold, so his body probably went into shock. At least that was the initial theory, and still kind of remains the theory of the Pittsburgh police and the DA's office, but people have questions. Dakota was a swim team captain, an athlete, and according to his friends, was not that drunk when he left the bar, and he was an experienced drinker, so like even if he was drunk, you know, the odds of him stumbling and falling would seem low. Falling into the river and drowning when you aren't that intoxicated and are an accomplished swimmer, you know, just doesn't seem to add up. His body was also clean from any scratches, marks, you know, things of that nature, according to the autopsy report. But someone who spent 40 days in the river and then went through a fucking dam would have some marks on their body. Dakota's case was covered in that same Oxygen special that I referenced, in which investigators and a specialist examined the autopsy photos and discovered suspicious marks around Dakota's neck, which a forensic pathologist claimed that they were strongly suggestive of and entirely consistent with a ligature having been applied around the neck, indicating a ligature strangulation. And a ligature strangulation just means that Dakota was strangled with something and not like a person's hands. So like a rope or, you know, whatever. I don't want to get into that, but that's what that means. They also found a difference in coloration on the fingernail beds of the fourth and fifth fingers on both the right and left hands, which would be consistent with someone reaching up to release pressure from something that had been wrapped around someone's neck. There was also very little decomposition internally and externally, and the body did not show any similarities to one that would have been in the river for 6 weeks. So all of these inconsistencies, right? One of the biggest, you know, let's take a moment here things about this case is that the location of Dakota's body, where it was found, there was a smiley face painted on the underpass near where his body was, which ties us into the smiley face killer. But one more interesting thing about the Dakota James case is that several weeks earlier, James was more than likely drugged and almost kidnapped, which also lies consistent with the smiley face killer, or the theory, the smiley face killer theory. He had been out for a night of drinking with the same group of friends and eventually found himself on a street that he didn't know, and he had no idea how long he had been not with his group of friends, like he just didn't know. He texted his friend to come and get him, and she called him, and you know, he's crying and saying, you know, I don't know where I am. I'm so cold. Please help me. I'm lost. So she was able to find him via his phone's GPS. So I'm assuming this is like a find my friends, find my iPhone type thing. I don't know. And he was on the bottom floor of a residential building. So when she got there, there was a dark SUV parked in the wrong lane in front of this building, right? And Dakota is walking straight for it. And he is going to get into this car, and she, until she pulls up and she yells at him, and she's like, you know, hey, come here. So he did not get into that SUV. He had no memory of the past 4 hours, but he didn't like want to go to a hospital or even like really talk about it. In his official autopsy report, there were traces of the date rape drug GHB, which there is a scientific name for that I'm not going to try to say. So you can look it up. But that could easily explain his missing memory from 5 weeks prior. You know, like, was that period of time where he doesn't know where he was and almost got in this car? Was that the first attempt of Dakota's killer? You know, because that would explain, you know, this the second attempt where they unfortunately were successful and, you know, he leaves a place not all that inebriated and, you know, whatever. But GHB was found in his autopsy report, so that would explain it. And yes, I do realize that the GHB in his autopsy report could indicate that he wasn't in the right state of mind and could have fallen in the river because, you know, he wasn't all there. But his first drugging and attempted kidnapping being so similar to his second drugging and actual murder, just way too close together for me to think that that's just a coincidence. Especially when you factor in the other discrepancies in the autopsy report and the painted smiley face. There was also a similar disappearance of a young man in Pittsburgh, Paul Kachu. I could be saying that name wrong. I apologize. Back in 2014, where he left the bar after having too much to drink. He made it home and he wound up cutting his hand on some glass, and he called his friends because he cut his hand on some glass. I guess it was pretty bad. And when his friends got there, he was like really, really upset, and he was sort of not okay. And they were eventually able to calm him down. And what I just don't understand. Like, this is just like one thing that like really pisses me off about this, but all of his friends, everyone that went there, and I don't know how many, could have been one, could have been two, but it said friends in all the articles that I read about him. But they all went to get something to eat around whatever time. And when they come back to the apartment around 1:30, Paul was gone, and so were his keys and his wallet and his cell phone. So later on, once after he's declared missing, police get surveillance footage that shows him at 2:45 a.m. going towards the 10th Street Bridge that crosses the Monongahela River. And he's like walking funny. He's weaving side to side, just not in the right space of mind, right? So 3 months after that footage was taken, the body was found in Wheeling, West Virginia, in the Ohio River. This case, some say, is linked to the Dakota James case. However, whether or not we can say that this was a smiley face killer, an actual homicide or an accident. It's still undetermined. The main detectives in the Smiley Face Killer case say that, hey, this very easily could be a homicide, but we don't think it's related to us. His death was officially ruled as an undetermined drowning. So, you know, it fits in that aspect. I could not find anything to say whether or not anyone found a smiley face painted around where his body was found. So I'm assuming that's not the case, but whatever. So between this information that I just gave you and, you know, the late 1990s cases that can be pointed to the smiley killer or smiley face killer, there's more information to cover. You know, who is and where is the smiley face killer? Is it one person? Is it a group of people? Are they tied to the deaths of Dakota James and Paul Kachi? Well, let's find out after this message. Are you like me and absolutely hate everything about going to the grocery or convenience store? The people who stand in the middle of the aisle looking at seven different types of lettuce. The people who follow way too close and you can't shake them no matter where you go. The long lines of people paying with coupons and or checks. Seriously, people, stop paying with checks when you go to places. No one has the time. Well, what if I told you that you could eliminate that hassle altogether? Enter Instacart. Instacart gives you access to multiple stores and products that you can have hand-selected for you by personal shoppers based on your preferences. Have your shopping needs delivered to your door in as fast as 1 hour. Instacart also highlights deals to help you save money and gives you smart suggestions for new items. For a monthly fee, you can have all of these things right at your fingertips. Follow the link in the show notes and let Instacart know that we sent you, and that in turn helps support Making a Martini. Sign up and you can get free delivery on your first order over $35. Instacart. Never step foot in a grocery store again. All right, my spooky little drunk sluts. Let's dive into this smiley face killer. So, in between the years of 1997 and 2008, a similar pattern of nearly 50 young men were found in various bodies of water, ranging from the Midwest to the Northeast states of America. The bodies would show similar wounds, marks, etc., indicating that the bodies were bound in some way and also killed before they were put into the water. There would also be traces of the date rape drug GHB to some degree. Police investigators started noticing more of a pattern with the actual victims than the cases, however. They would typically always be young, fit, athletic, white male college students, usually attending the university closest to where their bodies were found. Close ones to the victims would always describe them as fun, outgoing, well-liked, etc. Not the type that would give a person motive to kill them. And almost all of them were last seen leaving a bar after drinking with friends. And of course, at many of the crime scenes where the bodies were found, a spray-painted smiley face. The birth of the smiley face killer came from two New York City detectives, Kevin Gannon and Anthony Duarte, guessing on that pronunciation. Could have looked these things up, but you know me. But this was after the discovery of potential first known victim of the smiley face killer, Patrick McNeil. McNeil was last seen leaving a bar after telling his friends that he had had enough to drink and he forced himself to throw up in the bathroom. And he stumbled out and down the street, and the last anyone ever saw of him was him turning a corner on East 90th Street in Manhattan. People who last saw him also say that a double-parked van wound up following him up the street, stopping when he stopped, following his pace, and then ultimately turning onto East 90th Street when he did. 1 month later, McNeil's body is found floating next to a Brooklyn pier in the East River. Because his BAC was determined to be a 0.16, which in the other cases of potential smiley face killer victims is a very reoccurring BAC for victims. And that's something that I haven't really seen written out anywhere. That's something that I noticed when I was looking up things. And I will be the first to tell you that I do not understand at all what happens to blood after a person dies. Couldn't tell you. But in the quite small research I did about it, because it grossed me out, BAC levels at an autopsy are only valid up to 48 hours after death. I didn't look up and see if being in the water changed that at all, but you know, Patrick McNeil was found 1 month later. So I don't know if that BAC being that high is normal. So anyway, but because of that BAC, his death was ruled an accidental drowning. Sound familiar? This is when Detective Gannon starts to call bullshit on these, you know, cases being accidents after the chief of police in New York at that time for his precinct ruled that there was no foul play involved in the death of Patrick McNeil, except that the autopsy states that it was probable that McNeil was both bound and burned before being exposed to the river. And that's, you know, not something that happens. And by burned, I mean like rope burn. Also, fly larvae was found on McNeil's body. Flies don't lay eggs in cold temperatures. And this is, you know, the day that he would have disappeared was February of 1997. So it's not only cold outside, but you can best believe that that water in the East River is freezing. So that doesn't add up. But Gannon vows to solve McNeil's case and find the killer, and he ultimately retires from the police force. So after meeting Detective Duarte, the two of them, you know, they just scour over as many similar accidental drowning, quote unquote, cases that they can find and start to really notice a pattern. The young, fit college men going missing after being last seen drinking with friends, being found not in the location they went missing, not having consistent injuries or stages of decay that coincide with drowning or even being in the water for as long as they've been missing, bound ligature marks, traces of GHB, and maybe most terrifying of all, the spray-painted calling card of whomever could be doing this. There are a few theories that the smiley face killer is actually a gang of highly organized and premeditated killers that are able to drug, apprehend, more than likely torture, and then eventually kill their victims and make it look like a total accident, which is a big part of why the smiley face killer theory is rejected by police and the justice system, is because so often these things look like accidents. But Detectives Gannon and Duarte are still very much working to solve these similar crimes, and, you know, they've taken their stories on the road. They've really tried to get their, you know, this information out there to people. But there are, you know, many podcasts, TV specials, documentaries about the smiley face killer, and I encourage people to look some up. Most recently, like I said earlier, in 2019, there was a 6-part series on the Oxygen Network called Smiley Face Killers: The Hunt for Justice. So check it out. There's a train going by. Sorry, everyone. So on the other side of the coin, we do have the people who have zero belief in these crimes being connected or even homicides at all. Some of the biggest objections to the idea of this being a serial killer or group of serial killers is the fact that a graffiti smiley face is probably the number one most common graffitied thing on buildings and bridges, underpasses, stuff like that. So finding the smiley face near bodies of water that probably have like bridges and stuff by them, it's definitely creepy when you think about it that way. But if you also think about like how many smiley faces do people see, you know, consistently everywhere, the bodies haven't been found. So that's one thing that people are like, I don't know about this. The other thing, it's the idea of younger college males who drink a lot are more likely to actually have accidents, such as falling into the river. Being that the majority of these cases happen during the later autumn, early winter, you know, seasons, it's quite cold out, right? A college guy has too much to drink, walks home, and needs to pee. There happens to be a river, and he has the drunk stumbles, and he falls in. With these crimes taking place in the Midwestern to Northeastern states, you know, autumn and winter are cold, which means that the water is also absolutely freezing. So your body only has so much time in the water before it goes into shock. This also kind of ties into the idea of GHB. GHB is absolutely, you know, the date rape drug, right? But people can also take it recreationally. It's a hard word to say. As, you know, the side effects, other than the memory loss and, you know, discombobulation and, the negative side effects, it can also give you a feeling of euphoria, increased sex drive, and just, like, general good vibes. Now, me personally, I think that that argument relies pretty heavily on stereotypes of young college males. And I think that it's easy to just say, oh, well, that's what it is. But the smiley face killer cases have passed their, 20th anniversary, and little to no headway has been made other than to bring awareness to it and to provide a cautionary tale to young college kids to party, travel, and drink in numbers, which I condone. No one should be going off on their own. I say as if I have never done it, but, whatever. But who's to say? I don't think I can fully say one way or another if I think the smiley face killer is real. I just turned around and looked behind me. I don't know why, but I just got the most terrified. Oh, my God. So I don't know if it's real or not, but I do know that there are an awful lot of accidental or undetermined drowning cases involved with this. I got an email that have some pretty odd, missteps on the autopsy reports and the police work involved. So a lot of, still very large unanswered questions. I'm sorry, this story doesn't have a nice bow to wrap everything up, but I guess that's the point of Halloween, is to scare you. Okay, and after watching all these videos and reading all these articles, gotta say, not feeling great about going to sleep tonight. I don't know why I'm in my own house, that's not where these crimes happen, but still. Okay. So that's all I have for you this Halloween season. I hope you enjoyed our little potential serial killer episode. Happy Halloween, bitches. But like I've said before, Making Martini is now an Instacart affiliate, so if you follow the link in the episode notes, you can sign up and get free delivery on your first order over $35. And we also have the option now to, quote, buy me a coffee with a link in my bio, the episode notes, all my social medias, etc., where you can support Making Martini with a small donation of your choice. I think it's your choice. I think it's a minimum of $3. But whatever. My next episode is, in fact, going to be a guest host episode, so stay tuned for that. The guest host will be announced soon, but just, want to give you guys a little switch up. And I think that's about it. So yeah, this has been Making a Martini, up, dry, and straight to the point. Cheers, and happy Halloween!